Finally, as COVID grips Sydney, hopes of a return to normal life fade, at least for now. Vaccinations have increased, and that will stem the health crisis. But will the fear of disease paralyse the country for years to come? In an essay for ABC Religion and Ethics Online, Professor Shahar Hamiri of Queensland University says we need to adjust to a new era of risk.
I think we're all living through a very anxious moment at this point in time, and we are expecting the vaccines to be the silver bullet, the thing that drags us out of this quagmire of isolation internationally and domestically to some extent, and also, of course, the lockdown, which have been very disruptive. But we know from the experience of countries that have actually vaccinated significant proportions of their populations, so that doesn't do away with the fear and anxiety, the uncertainty about the future that we are experiencing at the moment, because the vaccines, firstly, they're not rolled out across the entire population. There are always gaps. New variants keep emerging. So these dilemmas, these policy dilemmas about whether to open up and just the general anxiety about what the future holds doesn't go away when you vaccinate a higher number of people. There is no magic number. A particular percentage where you get to that point, you know that that's it, the pandemic is over.
I mean, you're not claiming any epidemiological expertise here.
No.
You are a political scientist. So it's important to point that out. You're not claiming that. But even though you think mass vaccination will have a very beneficial impact on public health, it's not going to have the transformative effect on public thinking.
Yeah, I think that is the key issue. We've been through this very difficult period over quite a long time. And specifically in Australia, we had a feeling for quite a while that we managed to escape the worst impacts of the pandemic that we're experiencing in other countries. We did live our lives mostly for that period, almost as before the pandemic, with the exceptions of our borders being closed. And when the outbreaks did occur, people paid a fairly heavy price, especially in Melbourne, which had an extended lockdown, in order to maintain this policy of zero COVID within Australia. Given that, there's always going to be a certain risk involved in opening up. We can fully anticipate from where we are now that even as we continue to vaccinate the population, given that the risk of COVID can never be fully eliminated, especially as we reconnect with the world, you can expect that anxiety to remain in place, and it's going to be quite difficult also for political leaders to make the case convincingly that we need to move on from the relative isolation and the restriction that we're experiencing now to something that approximates what normal used to be like before the pandemic.
I mean, this isn't just presumption on your part. You've got some data here. What's been the experience in the United Kingdom when it's come to public attitudes? I'm not talking about actual public health statistics, but public attitudes after mass vaccination.
Yeah, the experience of the UK is really quite fascinating. And you mentioned public attitudes. There was a recent survey that was published by The Economist where they looked at public attitudes towards a number of restrictions that are currently quite common and whether these need to remain in place after the so-called Freedom Day, which the UK government has pledged to bring in on the 19th of July. And some very substantial minorities in Britain advocating for a permanent retaining of some of these restrictions, including, say, 35% arguing that quarantine on international travel need to remain permanently. There is a very substantial minority of people that would like to see a curfew maintained permanently. And this is, of course, where we are today. We still are relatively proximate to the crisis, so you may argue that maybe in time these minorities will get even smaller. But this is still very substantial. And the United Kingdom is a country that has vaccinated fully 50% of its population, and of its so-called at-risk population, it has vaccinated nearly all of that group, the over 50s and those suffering various underlying conditions. It is considered to be one of the highest rates of vaccination in the world today. In fact, for a relatively large country, it would be one of the highest in the world today. And that is a very clear example of how fear and uncertainty continue even as vaccination levels rise.
Yeah, we need to just really emphasize this. We're not talking here about 35% of the population, which is more than a third, saying that they envisage restrictions in the short to medium term, even the long term. It's permanent. They would permanently like to quarantine people entering the country, even without COVID.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what the survey tells us. I mean, of course, it is a particular sample group that was looked at in that survey, but these are remarkable figures. And once you add the people who are in favour of retaining more short-term restrictions, we are talking about a majority of Britain. So clearly, there is no wide acceptance that the country needs to move away from the restriction that it has experienced now for quite a long time. Now, you may argue that that makes sense, given that the Delta variant is actually experiencing very substantial growth in the United Kingdom. Cases daily now are rising above 30,000 and may even grow further. So this is about a 15 times a rise over what they were around May. But we're not seeing a similar increase when it comes to mortalities daily or even serious cases that need to be hospitalized. But there is still this fear, this reluctance to open up. For Australia, we need to think what that means for us when we are going to arrive in the same situation as the UK. At the moment, we're not really talking about that.
A lot of people, especially in my business, the media, just love invoking this image of war, COVID as war. Why don't you believe there will be the equivalent then of Victory Day?
It doesn't usually happen like that with pandemics, especially given the situation that we're just discussing with fear and anxiety remaining in place and the continuing discussions, debate, conflict over what policy to take in relation to reopening. These things are not settled in the same way that if you think about something like World War II, where there is a day that is still celebrated today, victory in Europe, victory in the Pacific. We know that was the day in which an armistice or in some cases maybe even a more limited truce was signed. We are not going to get that with the pandemic. We are going to continue debating into the future. What was the end point? Was the end point when cases started to drop, when the number of vaccinated people was rising, when restrictions were reduced, when they're fully eliminated? Is that even going to happen? All of these things are open matters, and they're not just going to happen automatically. And neither is there a very clear point at which they should happen, because a lot of these things are a matter of social acceptance and political decision making. There's no magical figure here that we can invoke to know that we have arrived at that point.
Yeah, well, I mean, if people want the war analogy, I suspect that with COVID, it's going to be much more like the Korean War. No declaration of victory, just this truce.
Yeah, maybe that is, in a sense, how it's going to be. Although, unlike the Korean War, this is going to be the case for every different country, and maybe for federal countries like Australia, maybe even for every state, there's going to be a slightly different arrangement that is going to emerge out of this pandemic. It's not entirely clear what it's going to look like. But yes, I mean, something akin to the Korean War time, however many jurisdictions there are out there, is roughly what we're going to see, I think.
Yeah, just finally, Shaha, you say the vaccination can eliminate the COVID health crisis, but what effect will it have on our willingness to take risks generally?
As a society, we have been taking risks. We take risks daily, including with infectious disease. For instance, when we get a big flu wave, or we used to get a big flu wave in the winter, we sort of accepted it, we did our best to minimize it, and we kept on going. Now, I'm not saying that the COVID crisis as it is in countries that have not been vaccinated is akin to those kinds of risks. We know that COVID was a far deadlier pathogen than some of the more normal ones we're dealing with. But should vaccination reduce the link between having the disease and having a serious illness even further, or to the levels that are experienced now in some countries? Well, we could argue that we're back in that situation where COVID is like one of those situations or diseases that we have been dealing with for a long time by managing risk, by taking some precaution, by doing the best we can not to catch it, by trying to deal with the people that have caught it to the best of our medical abilities, but without experiencing these very unusual and quite disruptive and in some cases even quite authoritarian restrictions that we have been experiencing over the last 18 months.
That's Shaha Hamiri of Queensland University, and you can read his piece at ABC Religion and Ethics Online.